This is the Breaker.News podcast for February 10th, 2019. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature. I sit down with Alan Mullen, the Chief of Staff to Speaker Darrell Plekis, to talk about the BC legislature scandal. From the archives, as the SNC-Lavalin corruption scandal reaches into the Prime Minister's office, listen to what Justin Trudeau told me on the campaign trail in 2015. And The Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to someone who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or should Jay Inslee and John Horgan step back from their big idea for a bullet train in Cascadia? They held another Cascadia summit last week. Governor Jay Inslee of Washington and BC Premier John Horgan have met four times. Inslee has appeared at the BC legislature. Last week, it was Horgan's turn to visit Olympia. They come from similar ends of the political spectrum. Democrat Inslee is exploring a run for the presidency, so such a relationship could prove valuable if he is on the 2020 ballot and makes it to the White House. Two big ifs. Inslee and Horgan see eye to eye on the environment, business, technology, and transportation. The latter is where they dream big. They are studying a Vancouver to Portland bullet train. BC is already spending $10.7 billion on the Site C Dam, as much as $10 billion on SkyTrain extensions, plus another $2 billion on a new Patello Bridge. Will there be any money left over to get a bullet train north of the 49th parallel? Don't hold your breath. California is building a high-speed commuter rail system from San Francisco to Los Angeles, but Californians are already calling it a boondoggle that will cost at least $77 billion. Megaprojects seem to always cost too much. Don't ever believe the on-time, on-budget hype. University of Oxford professor Bent Flyberg is the author of The Iron Law of Megaproject Management, and he says it has become the nature of the beast. The Suez Canal went 1,900% over budget. The Montreal 1976 Olympics suffered a 1,300% cost overrun. Montreal's Metro subway extension had a 160% cost overrun. Flyberg's research found four drivers for megaproject development: politicians, technology, economy, and aesthetics. Engineers always want to build the biggest, highest, and fastest. Corporations and unions love to make money and hire people. Designers love to design icons. And, of course, politicians. They love to spend other people's money. And they love to make monuments to themselves. And they love to get reelected. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Phoebe Zhang reports, "No halal, please. Meet China's pig vigilantes." A few days before the start of Lunar New Year, People's Daily, the Communist Party's official newspaper, sent out a New Year's greeting on Weibo, China's Twitter-like service. It said, "Butcher the pig and save some pork." For a small online group of vigilantes waging a war against pan-halal tendencies in Chinese society, the short message was loaded with importance and symbolism. So-called vigilantes have been watching with growing unease what they see as the creeping Islamization of Chinese society, marked by the setting up of halal cafeterias in universities, the provision of halal-only food on planes, and the use of code words to prevent the utterance of pig or pork on national television or social media. The Quran forbids the consumption of pork. China has an estimated 25 million Muslims who live mainly in the central and western provinces. The fight to take back the Year of the Pig is merely the newest battle in an escalating confrontation between the vigilantes and those they see as religious extremists. It also comes in the wake of reports that millions of Muslim Uyghurs are being held in re-education camps in the northwestern region of Xinjiang, fueling allegations of a state-led campaign against followers of the Islamic faith. In the LA Times, David Zeinizer reports, Downtown LA developer donated $50,000 before pivotal vote involving high-rise project, records show. A real estate company seeking to raise a portion of the former Los Angeles Times headquarters and replace it with two high-rise towers gave $50,000 to a campaign committee with ties to Councilman Jose Huizar 2 months before a crucial vote on the property, according to recently filed contribution records. Oni Contracting California, Inc., part of the group of companies that bought the downtown property in 2016, made the donation to Families for a Better Los Angeles. The committee held at least two fundraisers featuring Huizar last year. The donation from Oni arrived weeks before Huizar's home and offices were raided by FBI agents. Since those raids, the Times has reported that Families for a Better Los Angeles has come under scrutiny from the FBI in its corruption investigation into Huizar and other City Hall figures. Oni, which is based in Vancouver, wants to build a 37-story and a 53-story tower on the site. Donors cannot give more than $800 per election cycle to a council member, but there is no limit to donations for independent committees. Oni's spokesman, who is a former Vision Vancouver staffer, said Oni likes to support the local communities in which we do business. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. On Como News, Jennifer Sullivan reports, jury finds Ride the Ducks Seattle negligent in deadly Aurora Bridge crash. After 2 weeks of deliberations and 4 months of testimony, jurors hearing the lawsuit stemming from the 2015 Ride the Ducks crash in Seattle found in favor of the plaintiffs. Jurors awarded some 40 plaintiffs $123 million, a sum to be paid by Ride the Ducks International and Ride the Ducks Seattle. Though the plaintiffs also sued the City of Seattle and State of Washington, accusing them of negligence for not installing a barrier between oncoming traffic on the Aurora Bridge, jurors did not agree. Attorney Karen Kohler, who represented the plaintiffs, sought $300 million for her clients. On September 24, 2015, the Duck vehicle's front axle broke, according to the National Transportation Safety Board. Investigators found the break was caused by improper manufacturing by Ride the Ducks International and improper maintenance by Ride the Ducks Seattle. 5 people were killed and nearly 60 people were hurt. In the Oregonian, Shane Dixon Kavanaugh reports, not just Oregon. Saudi students in at least 8 states and Canada vanish while facing criminal charges. University students from Saudi Arabia have vanished while facing criminal charges here and in at least 7 other states as well as Canada. Evidence that a growing number of defendants from the wealthy Persian Gulf Kingdom have fled justice in the United States. The Oregonian uncovered 5 examples in Oregon and began searching for other states in late January. They found similar cases in Montana, Ohio, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, Utah, Washington, and Wisconsin. The Oregonian also found 2 cases in Nova Scotia. Saudi students in 2 separate incidents skipped bail and disappeared after being accused of sexual assault. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The British Columbia Legislature is back in session on February 12th, and Darrell Plekis will be back in the Speaker's chair. His damning January 21st report revealed some of the reasons why he called in the RCMP to investigate Clerk Craig James and Sergeant-at-Arms Gary Lenz. The 2 suspended officials have replied. For full coverage, including fact-checking of James and Lenz's responses, go to thebreaker.news. Last week, the Information and Privacy Commissioner, the Merit Commissioner, and the Ombudsperson wrote a joint urgent letter to the Legislative Assembly Management Committee. They were calling for freedom of information at the BC Legislature, whistleblower protection for staff, and merit-based hiring of senior officials. NDP Government House Leader Mike Farnworth vowed to implement the changes. Details and deadlines are to come, but it is a step forward for more transparency and accountability in BC. I sat down with Alan Mullen, who is Darrell Plekis' chief of staff, to talk about this and other issues. Here is my interview.
The devil's in the details, of course. We don't know when this will exactly happen. We don't know what the wording will be. But we are at a point of no return.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think it's a great first step. Is it the be all and end all? No, it's not. Like I said, it's a great first step. I think the government house leader, Minister Farnworth, has taken this very seriously. Taken these suggestions. They're not new suggestions. They're not new advice. People have been screaming for this for quite a while. On the back of the Plekis report, I think it's very clear now that we do need to expand these FOI laws to include a lot more than they include currently. Minister Farnworth has stated that it will be either this session coming up here that we're starting, or it'll be the next session. I mean, that would be a pretty quick process, and would be great if we can get it done that quick. But it'd be very interesting, like you said, the devil is in the details. What does that extend to? My understanding currently is the discussion is around the clerk's office, the sergeant-at-arms office, the speaker's office, but again, not to do with constituency offices or caucuses. So it'll be very interesting to see, what those suggestions are and really how it plays out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is an interesting case where government often is pushed to react instead of be proactive. The NDP in the 2017 election platform promised duty to document. It promised to institute fines for those who break the law, who destroy records. They haven't moved on that, but since this exploded November 20th, it's been it's been the Speaker, Darrell Plekis, who have pushed this forward and pushed the NDP to say it's going to act, and push the opposition, BC Liberals, to also propose various changes. Talk about that aspect. You're now, along with Darrell, really carrying the flag for a better government here in BC.
Well, absolutely, and I mean, it's not even in a partisan way, or we don't want to politicize this in any way, shape, or form. This is about doing the right thing. This is about getting it done for British Columbians, and in our opinion, boy, is that long overdue. I mean, not to be disparaging to anybody, but I want to point out too that the current premier, then House Leader for the Opposition, brought up the notion back in 2013 of this payout of the retirement allowance of $257,000. That was brought up by that NDP, by the now Premier. It fell on deaf ears. I'd like to know, how does that fall on deaf ears? He brought it up, he was screaming about it, nothing happened. We brought stuff up. We've been looking at this, obviously since Darrell Plekis has been the Speaker. I came on board, shortly thereafter. We've been looking at these items. We've been investigating these items. We didn't need to be in the building very long to realize, whoa, there's something really wrong here. We're talking about people who've been in the building for a long time. How did they not see it? How did they not know? So when we brought this up and essentially these individuals walked off the property, instead of looking and saying, well, maybe there's a reason for that, the story became the Speaker and myself. I just think we need to really look at how we look at things. It just doesn't make sense, and hopefully the changes to the FOI laws will help that, because the average British Columbian or the average reasonable person would look and see what we saw.
Mm-hmm. It's been a night and day since November 20th to the milestone day of January 21st. November 20th, of course, when Craig James and Gary Lenz were suspended. January 21st, of course, the day of the report to the Legislative Assembly Management Committee. Talk about how your life has changed, as well as the challenges that you faced, the challenges that Darrell Plekis faced in that period of time when the spotlight was in the wrong place.
Well, I mean, to say it was tough is an understatement. I mean, we spent, the previous year looking at this, gathering information, doing our due diligence, for lack of a better word, investigating, 18, 20-hour days in the harshest of conditions, trying to, get it right, but make sure we weren't spooking anybody, but doing it in the right way. These individuals essentially are placed on leave by the Legislative Assembly, not by Darrell Plekis or Alan Mullen, by the Legislative Assembly through unanimous vote on a motion. And the Speaker and I became the story. And to say we took a kicking, again, is an understatement. We were attacked personally. We were attacked professionally. It was incredibly difficult on our families and on us. personally, we expected a little bit of it, nowhere near what we got. You know, for two guys trying to do the right thing, our motives were questioned. Our experience was questioned. I mean, the speaker was called rogue and accused of setting up a parallel government. You know, name calling by you know, elected officials. Well, I don't care what party you're with or what party you support or don't support. That is not, as a British Columbian, that is not what I want or expect out of any elected official, to resort to name calling or making things up. That's just not okay for anybody at any time in this or any other province, in my opinion. So 2 months of that, the mainstream media, again, what are our motives? Well, clearly it wasn't to take a proverbial kicking for 2 months. Our motives were simply this: look after British Columbians, look after the tax dollar. And then fast forward to January 21st, this report comes out, literally 180. People from all over this province, you know, coming out saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. Didn't realize, didn't know, we should have waited. So a little bit of vindication, yeah, but still, people are coming out and saying, yeah, we're happy that you brought it up. We're happy for you guys, but whoa, we're in shock. We're saddened. We're disgusted. You're right. We're going to throw up.
And here we are in a province with so many challenges. Public debt about $68 billion. We've got record homelessness. We've got the other end of the scale, record wealth. There's serious concerns about law and order, crime. This is what's happened at the legislature is microcosm of what's gone wrong in this province.
Right. I mean, I've been asked, you know, looking through this report or you know, throughout this investigation, kind of what I feel is the most striking thing. I just can't get my head around the $257,000. Here's an individual, and that's not a theory of mine or the speaker's. That's not an opinion. That's fact. That is fact, and we've released the evidence on that. Here's an individual who's earning considerably more than a Supreme Court judge in this province. Making $347,000 a year, cutting himself at $257,000, essentially bonus. You call it what you will, it's a bonus. And there's people in this province that can't put breakfast or lunch or supper on the table for themselves or their families. That's disgraceful. That is absolutely a failure at every possible level. And we have to do better. Can we do better? Oh yes, but it starts here. We don't want to just peek behind the curtain. We want to rip it down and make sure it stays down. And this notion that was then and this is now, as I've heard some elected officials say, that's absolute nonsense. That was then, correct. And this is now, correct. But the only way we're going to move forward is by learning from the past, and let's look at it. But let's look at it openly and honestly and transparently. I know that's at times a dirty word in Victoria. Well, no more. We need to be transparent, and British Columbians are demanding it.
That was Alan Mullen, Chief of Staff to Speaker Darrell Plekis. An RCMP investigation continues. Nobody has been charged yet. This is the Reporter's Notebook on the Breaker.News podcast. A major scandal in Ottawa. The Globe and Mail reported last week that Jody Wilson-Raybould, Canada's first Indigenous Attorney General, was transferred to another cabinet post because she resisted pressure from the Prime Minister's office. She would not bow to political pressure to withdraw federal corruption charges against SNC-Lavalin and negotiate a plea bargain with the Montreal Construction and Engineering Company. Trudeau has denied the story, but Wilson-Raybould has not. She has not said anything so far. If convicted in a case about $48 million of bribes paid to the Gaddafi regime in Libya, SNC-Lavalin could be banned from public infrastructure projects for a decade. The company has been involved in every rapid transit project in Metro Vancouver and wants to build the Broadway subway and Surrey-Langley SkyTrain extensions. On September 10, 2015, during a campaign stop in West Vancouver, I grilled Trudeau about SNC-Lavalin's corruption and his promise to spend billions of dollars on transit infrastructure. Coincidentally, one of the Liberal candidates standing behind him on the John Lawson Park dock was Jody Wilson-Raybould.
Bob Mack and George Strait earlier today you were asked about transit funding, and about and your answer was that you're going to allow the province and municipalities choose which kind of transit technology they want to use. For instance, in Vancouver, where SNC-Lavalin wants to build the Broadway subway, that would probably be SkyTrain, and that's proven to be a more expensive technology than other technologies. And of course, we know about SNC-Lavalin making bad headlines around the world, not only in Canada, but around the world for the past several years over allegations of corruption and bribery that has even led to courts in Canada. And of course, you're from Montreal, where there are other problems there that are being aired in the Charbonneau Commission. I know SNC-Lavalin has lobbied members of your caucus, including Mrs. Murray. Is it not irresponsible for you to propose going further into deficit while putting billions of dollars on the table for engineering and construction companies at a time when the industry is troubled in Canada with issues of integrity, with all these issues of corruption and bribery? Some of them have to still be tried in courts, but this is a serious issue. Are you not putting Canadian taxpayers' dollars at risk?
Canadians are troubled every time they have to wait longer than necessary to cross the Lionsgate Bridge to get to work or to get home to their kids. Canadians know that our refusal to invest in strong infrastructure that our economy needs to create jobs and growth is hurting our economy. Indeed, Mr. Harper's unwillingness to invest in the future of our country over 10 years has led to the slow growth and the great difficulties that Canadians are facing in terms of getting ahead. I have tremendous faith in our municipal and provincial partners to respond to the needs that Vancouverites and indeed all Canadians are facing, and removing politics from the equation in terms of how we decide what goes on a map where. The federal government should be in the, it shouldn't be in the business of picking and choosing projects or micromanaging bids. The federal government needs to be in the business of being a real partner, putting money on the table so provinces and municipalities can get the infrastructure that Canadians need to be more productive and have a better quality of life built.
The question is about money going to waste through corruption and bribery. You've not answered that question.
The Liberal Party.
What is the Liberal Party going to do to make things better in Canada, to prevent companies from SNC-Lavalin getting into the trouble that it did, to make sure taxpayers' money goes to where it is? Because if taxpayers' money is going to waste on infrastructure and transportation, that's taxpayers' money that can't go into health and education or protecting oceans.
The Liberal government is committed to openness and transparency. We have taken new measures that raise the bar on openness and transparency through disclosure of parliamentary expenses that the NDP actually dragged their heels on, through disclosure, through open data, through a commitment to restoring Canadians' trust in politics, in politicians, and in the service they offer to Canadians. Our government will be transparent and open with its procurement processes and demanding the same of our partners, and that's what we're committed to.
You haven't talked about any efforts to actually crack down on corruption. It's a big problem across the country, especially in Montreal.
Openness and transparency is what Canadians expect of their governments. They've had 10 years of the most secretive government in Canada's history with Mr. Harper, and that's why sunshine being the best disinfectant means that we're actually going to be answering Canadians' call for better government through openness, transparency, and integrity. Having a prime minister that tells the truth will be a nice change.
That was a September 2015 news conference by Justin Trudeau in West Vancouver. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to BC Health Minister Adrian Dix for expanding the deep brain stimulation surgery program for people living with Parkinson's disease. The complex, high-tech surgery can help those with the degenerative disease live without symptoms. DBS surgeries will be doubled in BC, and a second surgeon will be trained. It is a good first step, but a lot more is needed to help clear the backlog. In Saskatchewan, for instance, there are three surgeons and a very short wait list. There are 70 patients on the BC waitlist for the surgery, a waitlist that can last up to 5 years. One of them is my brother, Jonathan. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for February 10th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on February 10th in 1996, IBM's Deep Blue supercomputer beat chess master Garry Kasparov? The human, however, won 3 and drew 2 of the next 5 games. Kasparov accused Deep Blue of cheating after a 1997 rematch, and then IBM took Deep Blue apart. Well, now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.